Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to CBS Sunday Morning with Jane Pauley ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Good morning. I'm Jane Pauley, and this is Sunday Morning. The recent death in prison of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny underscores the very real danger of being detained in Russia. Ever since just re-elected Russian leader Vladimir Putin launched his invasion into Ukraine, speaking out against the war, even calling it a war, can quite literally be life-threatening. Journalists are especially at risk. This morning, we look into the stories of two Americans now detained in Russian prisons, their futures and their very lives in limbo. Seth Doane will start us off. Then Leslie Stahl marks Evan Guskovich's first year in captivity.
Did you worry about your mom going to Russia?
She was only going to go for 2 weeks.
Alsu Kurmasheva of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, is among the reporters detained in Russia.
This sends a powerful message to all journalists that they are not welcome.
Is there a chilling effect?
Yes, because there is a concern that journalists may be arrested.
Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Guskovich is also a prisoner and pawn for Putin.
Here we are, doing the one-year anniversary. It's grotesque.
It is. It's completely outrageous. And this represents a very clear and present danger. And it's something that we need to speak out against.
Detained in Russia, coming up on Sunday Morning.
From his early days writing jokes for the Smothers Brothers, to stand-up comedy, movies, and now a hit series, Steve Martin is nothing less than a legend. This morning, he's looking back with our Tracy Smith.
Have I started yet?
I have. Okay, then let's go.
Could you at least pat yourself on the back a little bit and say, look at what I've done?
Sometimes I do look around and go, how'd this happen? In my most self-congratulatory moment, I go, it all came out of my head.
Well, here's something you don't often see.
And here's something else you don't often see. Steve Martin telling it all for a new documentary. Ahead on Sunday Morning.
He became famous for all the wrong reasons, but you could say things are looking up. Nancy Giles shares the story of the Central Park birder.
It's been more than 3 years since Christian Cooper made national news.
Tonight, a white woman who wrongfully called the police on a black
as the black bird watcher who recorded this video when a white woman refused his request to put her dog on a leash.
I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening my life.
We have an update.
What's that and?
That's a blue jay.
He's still passionate about birds.
We'll go birding in Central Park with Christian Cooper.
Later on Sunday morning.
Also this morning, we'll hear a very personal history from author Doris Kearns Goodwin. She tells Robert Costa all about her late husband, respected White House speechwriter Richard Goodwin.
Not typically.
Martha Teichner talks with author Percival Everett about his new take on the tale of Huckleberry Finn, told through the eyes of Huck's enslaved friend, Jim. Kalafasane talks politics and more with journalist Fareed Zakaria. This is a Sunday morning for the 24th of March, 2024. And we'll be back after this.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop. If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Urban Outfitters, Sephora, and Nike. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Imagine having a loved one arrested and held in a foreign prison for who knows how long. That's what the families of a growing number of American journalists who ran afoul of Vladimir Putin are going through right now. Coming up, Leslie Stahl speaks with the sister of detained Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Griskovich. But to begin, Seth Doan has the story of another family's heartbreaking ordeal.
My mom is definitely my biggest inspiration, and I just miss her like more than I can possibly say. And I worry about her safety so much.
15-year-old Bibi Buturin has not been here at home with her mom in Prague since last spring.
It's so lovely.
And a recent family trip to America.
Should we consider this box checked?
Yes.
Seems like a distant memory. These are the latest images she's seen of her mother, Alsu Kurmasheva, an American-Russian journalist who's now detained in Russia.
Did you worry about your mom going to Russia?
I think we all understood that it was a risk, but she was only going to go for 2 weeks, and it was for my sick grandmother.
Kurmasheva was about to return in June from that personal trip to Kazan when Russian authorities confiscated her passports. She'd not reported her U.S. citizenship. She was permitted to stay with her mom until October.
Mass police officers came knocking on her mother's apartment door, and they took her away.
It's turned Pavel Buturin into a single dad of sorts. Their girls both have U.S. citizenship, like their mom.
She is in jail in Russia because she is an American citizen and because she's a journalist. And it seems like the Russian government is just building more cases against her.
Kurmasheva's pretrial detention was extended until April 5th. She's facing charges of failure to self-register as a foreign agent and disseminating false information about the Russian army, which could mean prison sentences of up to 5 and 10 years, respectively.
This is the book that Alsu is listed as an editor on it. You think this was the problem?
I know that this book is a problem. It's featured in her case file.
This book is filled with stories of kind of everyday people who oppose Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
There is nothing incendiary, nothing criminal about these stories. There's no cause for violence in the book. It's just opinions, not even Alsu's opinions. But as a journalist, she certainly has the rights to collect and publish any opinions.
Butorin and Kurmasheva are both journalists with the Prague-based Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty, or RFERL. It's funded by U.S. taxpayers, but is editorially independent and reports news in 27 languages and 23 countries, including Iran and Afghanistan.
When freedom of expression is being shut down in one place after another after another, when the lights are turned out in one place, we turn them back on.
Steve Kappas is president.
Our place is committed to the fundamental practice of accurate journalism where it might not otherwise be practiced these days.
Does that put your people in particular risk?
It does.
Kappas, who's worked at CBS and NBC, keeps photos of Kurmasheva and three other RFERL journalists who are currently detained, one in Russian-controlled Crimea and two in Belarus, next to pictures of reporters who've died while on duty.
It has a way of kind of grabbing you and making you pay attention and realize there's an awful lot at stake here now and never forget that they need to come home.
They're in regular contact with the Wall Street Journal. Its reporter, 32-year-old American Evan Gerskovich, is also detained in Russia, arrested on espionage charges.
Many Americans have not heard of Alsu. Why is Alsu's name not as familiar to Americans?
It should be. President Biden brought her up by name at the end of December. All of us are working our contacts to get as much attention for her case as we can.
Are you following Alsu's case?
We are following her case, and it's extremely worrying.
Jody Ginsburg runs the Committee to Protect Journalists in New York.
Are these types of charges new?
Since the full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022, we see them much more frequently. New laws were brought in that make it extremely difficult to report on the war. Even calling it a war can bring you a jail sentence.
Globally, they figure there are 320 journalists jailed for their work. Most are imprisoned for reporting in their own countries, nearly half in these five nations.
And that's, I think, a reflection of the democratic decline we've seen over a number of years.
Of the foreign journalists detained worldwide, 12 of the 17 are jailed in Russia. Ginsburg calls it state-sponsored hostage-taking.
There's a twofold effect when you arrest a journalist, particularly when you arrest a journalist with foreign citizenship, as we see in Alsu and Evan's case. You have a political prisoner, so you have someone with which to negotiate with the US, but this kind of action sends a powerful message to all journalists that they are not welcome.
The U.S. classifies Gerskovich as wrongfully detained, but has not yet given that status to Kurmasheva. The State Department told us it's deeply concerned about Kurmasheva's detention and continues to seek access to her, noting it reviews circumstances surrounding the detentions of U.S. nationals overseas.
What happens when you designate an individual, a U.S. citizen, is wrongfully detained is you bring more resources from the government on their case. And now we really need to make her case as well known as Evan. It's really important that both of them and all the journalists wrongfully detained are freed.
Efforts to raise Kurmasheva's profile are underway. From a billboard in Times Square,
we want her to be released immediately,
to a much smaller scale. A group of friends gathering at a Prague restaurant. Todd Benson is from Seattle.
How do you think Pavel and the girls are doing?
They show a great face, but I think deep down they're hurting.
And that hurt surfaced while Pavel Butorin was reading a note his wife sent from jail.
Celebrate freedom and love. Awesome.
Declaring her wrongfully detained is up to the U.S. government, and ultimately Alsu Kurmasheva's fate is to be decided by the Russians.
I'm sorry.
So for now, he tries to control what he can.
I need to keep it together. I don't want emotion to get involved.
But I think anyone would understand being emotional.
Maybe that's what they want. Maybe they want us to break down and surrender and give up. I'm not going to give up. We will not rest until we see Alsu here with her family at home.
Sound the gifting panic alarm. You need to get an amazing gift. Wait, no, the perfect gift. And it needs to say, I'm a thoughtful person, and I appreciate you, and I know exactly what you like, all at the same time. Relax. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode on Etsy is here to take the stress out of gifting so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. It's easy to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life, like the pickleballer, the jazz fan, the Zen seeker, the artist, or the pasta lover. From 90s nostalgia and mixology to reality TV and gaming, there's something for everyone on Etsy. A gifting moment is always around the corner. Whether it's a birthday, an anniversary, a holiday, or even just a day to say thank you, Gift Mode on Etsy has you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Gift easy with Gift Mode on Etsy. This episode is brought to you in part by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat, like The Guest List by Lucy Foley. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
It's estimated some 100 million Americans spend a lot of time looking up, which makes birdwatching one of our favorite pastimes. But it's a safe bet there's never been a birder quite like the fellow our Nancy Giles caught up with.
New York's Central Park is an oasis of green in one of the world's busiest cities, drawing millions of visitors from around the world, including more than 280 species of birds, many of which make this a regular stop on their annual migrations.
They're passing through New York City and they see the sea of concrete and they're like, where am I gonna go? And then they see this and they're like,
oh, and they all hit right there.
They all hit right here.
For Christian Cooper, the woods in Central Park's Ramble have always been a sanctuary, and the birds who make their way here, his obsession and delight.
What's that and?
That's a blue jay. I like to think of it as sort of the Rihanna bird, because if you ever heard Rihanna sing Shut Up and Drive, and she says, so if you want me, let me know, no. The bird is kind of going, jang.
It's been more than 3 years since Christian Cooper made national news.
Tonight, a white woman who wrongfully called the police on a black man in New York City's Central Park.
As the black man who recorded this video, when a white woman refused his request to comply with park rules and put her dog on a leash.
Please don't come close to me.
Sir, I'm asking you to stop recording me.
Please don't come close to me.
Please take your phone off.
Please don't come close to me.
I mean, you had your phone.
I had this. And so I was like, all right, well, then I'm going to record your scofflaw behavior of your dog being off the leash. You know, I had no idea she was going to take it to a racial place.
I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening my life.
Please tell them whatever you like.
Once she did, I was like, okay, so I can either stop recording like she wants me to and hope that that makes all this go away, you know, capitulate to that racial intimidation, or I can keep doing what I'm doing until that dog is on the leash.
He is recording me and threatening myself and my dog.
By the time the police arrived at the scene, both the woman and Christian Cooper had left.
Initially, my reaction was, you know what, I just want to crawl under a rock and hide until this blows over.
But George Floyd's brutal murder in Minneapolis would take place just hours later.
And I realized that was not the proper response.
Christian Cooper's video, first posted by his sister Melody, went viral.
I'm being threatened by a man in the Ramble. Please send the cops immediately.
For better or worse, it highlighted the undercurrent of racial bias that still exists deeply in our society. And that's what we need to focus on, that bias. Same kind of racial bias made a white police officer in Minneapolis think that it was okay to kneel on a black man's neck until he was dead. Mm-hmm. Made the other cops around him think it was okay to stand by and do nothing. And George Floyd couldn't talk about it. Breonna Taylor couldn't talk about it. Ahmaud Arbery couldn't talk about it, but I could.
I'm Christian Cooper, and I am a bird.
These days, Christian Cooper's focus is back on his beloved birds. He hosts a National Geographic series, traveling far and wide to explore the wonders of birds.
And along the way, I'll show you what I adore about these crazy smart, dazzling, and super-powered feathered creatures.
And he's written a memoir about growing up on Long Island and the existential loneliness of being a closeted gay teenager.
That was a hard thing, growing up knowing that in the 1970s.
Yes. I remember the kind of things kids would say to other kids.
And
you know,
in what can be very conservative Long Island. So it was a hard place to be.
How did you cope?
A lot of escapism. Part of it was getting out into nature. That was incredibly healing.
Science fiction helped his imagination take flight.
Oh my God, Star Wars came out at just the right time.
And may I ask you, how many times did you see Star Wars?
I have seen Star Wars in the theaters 41 times. And then when the first sequel came out, The Empire Strikes Back, by the second night it had opened, I had seen it 4 times. So yes, I was a little bit of an addict.
What was that otherworldliness attraction about?
It just opens up new possibilities that you can imagine. And that can be important, you know, because if you can imagine something different, then maybe someday we can get there.
Kirk here.
Captain.
He credits the TV show Star Trek, particularly Mr. Spock, with helping him keep his cool during the confrontation in Central Park.
A Vulcan's mental discipline is to suppress emotion.
Right.
And act only rationally.
Right.
And logically.
And that's why when she said, I'm going to tell the police that an African-American man is assaulting me, you were able to just go, ohm, basically.
Spock also helped him survive his childhood.
Here I was, a nerdy, brainy kid, and here's a character on this TV show who's, you know, one of the heroes of the show, and he's all about the intellect. He's all about the brains. So that was really appealing to me, to the point that I spent hours as a child in front of the mirror, going like this, trying to learn to be able to raise one eyebrow without the other. And guess what? I mastered it.
You got it. Wait, do it again.
You keep your eyes on the bird,
right?
And you bring the binoculars to your
eyes,
and then boom.
The incident in Central Park has not dampened his enthusiasm for this place or for his avian friends.
It's a window into the world that people don't always have.
Doris Kearns Goodwin is one of our best-known and best-selling presidential historians. Now she's out with a new book, but this time it's a love story, and it's personal, as our Robert Costa explains.
Please welcome the great Doris Kearns Goodwin, everybody.
Doris Kearns Goodwin, come out here, Doris!
Doris Kearns Goodwin is a rare presence on our national stage, a historian with academic cred and pop culture cachet.
Here's Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Born in 1809 into a fight.
The teacher is Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Today we explore Lincoln's 1861.
Her work, of course, is serious, but she shares it with joy and sometimes a laugh.
It's fun when a younger person comes up to you and says, you know, my kids saw you on The Simpsons, or my grandchildren, they thought this is really exciting. Maybe you are something after all.
Goodwin, now 81, is renowned for telling the story of America, often through the prism of the presidency. Her latest book, about her late husband, does that too. And it's deeply personal. An unfinished love story is about Richard Goodwin's adventures in the turbulent 1960s. Writing speeches for titans like JFK, LBJ, and RFK. And it's about Richard and Doris.
He was an extraordinary character who somehow traversed almost every important moment in the 1960s. He's like Zelig in a certain sense in the 60s.
Some of the most iconic
lines from the 60s came right from Richard Goodwin's typewriter. The Great Society, Ripples of Hope, We Shall Overcome.
Dick loved poetry, he loved drama. I mean, using the anthem of the Civil Rights Movement in the middle of the great speech after the Selma demonstrations was just a moment that was almost a moment of genius that came to him.
And we shall overcome.
Before becoming a fixture at the side of presidents, Goodwin had a fast rise. Harvard Law, Supreme Court clerk, and then congressional investigator of the rigged TV quiz shows of the 1950s.
My name is Dick Goodwin. I'm an investigator with the Subcommittee on Legislative Oversight of the United States Congress.
Robert Redford's 1994 film Quiz Show dramatized his real-life crusade to prove the fix was in.
Don't treat me like I'm some member of your goddamn fan club. Are you telling me everybody got the answers but you?
You're so persistent, Dick. You know, I really envy that.
President Kennedy later brought Goodwin into his inner circle.
The genius of our scientists.
After Kennedy's death, so did LBJ, who looked to Goodwin for some rhetorical magic, as the LBJ tapes reveal.
And I just ask him if he can't put some sex in it. I ask him if he couldn't put some rhyme in it and some beautiful Churchillian phrases.
I need more sex and rhythm and Churchillian phrases in my speeches. The tapes were just so revealing, especially when you hear him talking about my husband that way.
And you write about how Johnson could be so flat and dry in his public remarks, but in private.
If people had known the way he talks on the tapes, if they had listened to him tell stories, they were brilliant. The private Lyndon Johnson is the most formidable, interesting character I think I've ever met in my life.
Doris Kearns Goodwin first met Johnson in 1967 when the towering Texan asked the young White House fellow for a dance.
I couldn't believe when I read this. You met him at a dance.
Yeah, I mean, what a way. He really twirled me around the floor, and then he whispered to me that he wanted me to be assigned directly to him in the White House.
Johnson's advisors were initially on edge about her anti-war views, but she quickly became someone he trusted, talking to her for hours during the bittersweet twilight of his life.
He could be mean at times, but underneath there was this force that wanted to make the country a better place. And the war in Vietnam cut much of that in two. And without that, there's no question he would have been one of the great presidents. But even now, he is one of those great presidents.
Doris and Richard Goodwin met at Harvard after LBJ left office and were married in 1975. They lived here in leafy Concord, Massachusetts, raising a family and working until Richard's death in 2018. And the couple's book collection now lines the shelves of the local library.
Never would I have an office quite so elegant as the great room here in the Concord Public Library.
These days, Goodwin stays busy with history, but also keeps a close eye on politics.
What's at stake in this upcoming election?
It's not an exaggeration to say democracy is at stake. I mean, I think about Lincoln when he said that early on that the central point of the fight of the Civil War was really whether democracy would exist, because if you could decide, as a southern set of states did, that they lost an election, so they're going to secede from the Union, then democracy is an absurdity. And that's the hallmark of our system, is that you lose an election and you accept it with grace.
What do you say to Americans who look at what's happening with this election and they just want to tune out, not pay attention?
Tuning out and not paying attention is an action. In fact, somehow not participating is even worse than many other things you can do, because it means you're saying, I don't care. It's not important. And that's a cowardly thing to say, because it's not true.
And Americans, she says, can always turn to the past for lessons.
I still think if we look back at history, that somehow America's pulled through each one of these tough times and we've come out strengthened. It's hard to see exactly how that's going to happen now, but it's going to happen only if people start marching, only if people start fighting for the rights they believe are being taken away. When conscience is fired and the majority will is exercised, we somehow come through, and I think we will again.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Introducing the new Blink Mini 2, the tiny but mighty smart security camera, starting at just $49.98. Plug-in Mini 2 anywhere, inside or outside your home, with the Blink weather-resistant power adapter. Stay connected with two-way audio, HD night view and color, and more. Shop Amazon.com/Blink.
Earlier, Seth Doane told us the story of detained journalist Alsu Kurmasheva. But perhaps the best-known American reporter being held behind bars in Russia is the Wall Street Journal's Evan Gershkovich. Leslie Stahl of 60 Minutes helps mark a grim anniversary.
Look around the Wall Street Journal offices in Manhattan. Evan Gershkovich, the hostage, is everywhere. On buttons, cards, shirts, and screens that stop you in your tracks.
This dominates this newsroom.
Yeah, totally. Boom.
It's so emotional.
I remember the first time we brought his parents up and they saw it. It was absolutely.
Emma Tucker is editor-in-chief.
I remember the Iran hostage situation, and the families were told, don't talk about it. Let's keep this quiet. Let the government do its work. No publicity.
Well, my instinct was to draw attention to this because it was so clearly outrageous. You know, he was accredited. He was doing his job. He had done nothing wrong. My sense of justice was offended by what had happened.
Last March 29th, Evan was on assignment in Russia when he was arrested by security forces and accused of being a spy, a charge vigorously denied by Gershkovich, The Wall Street Journal, and the U.S. government.
We condemn the detention of Mr. Gershkovich in the strongest terms.
He is the first reporter to be taken into custody this way since the Cold War. Why him, do you think?
It's very hard to know. Is it because he works for the Wall Street Journal, which is a recognizable, mm-hmm. famous American title? Is it because he's of Russian heritage? Mm-hmm. I wish I knew.
What is known is that Gershkovich is being held in a Stalin-era prison in Moscow. His pretrial detention has been extended several times. Court appearances have been few but jarring.
When you saw him in that glass cage, what went through you?
It was horrible. There's something so dehumanizing about those glass cages. I was surprised at the shock I felt at seeing it. So goodness only knows what his parents felt when they saw it.
Oh boy.
So yes, it was a shock. At the same time, he was standing tall. He looked defiant. He smiled.
Yeah.
So mixed emotions.
There's a picture of the whole family in here?
Yes. Yeah, here.
Oh, there's your dad.
Yep. Yeah, my brother's now taller than all of us.
I'll say.
In her apartment, where her younger brother would crash on the couch, Danielle Gershkovich said his calling was never in question.
Was he born to be a journalist?
Yes, I think he was born to be a journalist. He, I think, had always been seeking a life of adventure, and his travel, his writing, working at the Wall Street Journal as a Russia correspondent, it was his absolute dream job.
Children of Soviet emigres who spoke Russian at home, Danielle and Evan have always been close. Hearing that he was in custody was shattering.
I got a call from my mom, and it's just my stomach fell out. You know, your heart stops. It's so hard to believe that something like that is actually real. And I remember my mom and I discussing the morning after, is that really Evan, that photo that came out? We didn't want to admit for a moment that that was him.
Did you think it was a possibility? I mean, Russia a year ago had already become dangerous. Other news organizations were pulling reporters out.
I would say my whole family was nervous. He would always remind us he's an accredited journalist.
And therefore he thought he was safe.
Yeah, it's very unprecedented.
Of course, what was unprecedented has become almost routine under Vladimir Putin. Gershkovich is the latest American pawn on Putin's geopolitical chessboard against the West. Marine veteran Paul Whelan has been jailed in Russia for 5 years. Russian-American ballerina Ksenia Karolina was arrested in January, accused of treason for helping Ukraine. And basketball star Brittany Griner, imprisoned for 9 months on drug charges, was finally freed in an exchange for a notorious arms dealer known as the Merchant of Death.
Do you fear for your life?
Would it help?
Former world chess champion Garry Kasparov, who fled Russia in 2013, is one of Putin's most fervent critics.
You've just made some news. The Russians just added you to their list of terrorists and extremists. I thought you were already there, frankly.
It's like a badge of honor.
Putin just gets stronger and stronger, it seems, rather than the other way, which you predicted once, that he would be on the down.
Putin's strength is very much a result of our weakness. And any sign of indecisiveness, any sign of hesitation, feeds Putin with power because, yes, I can do this, I can do that. Nothing will happen.
Is there any possibility he'll be acquitted?
No.
None?
No. Putin treats Gershkovich as money or power or weapons. This is one of the tools of him staying in power. So he'll be negotiating.
Putin himself has made that clear. He said he was open to a prisoner swap involving Gershkovich and Whelan and a deal for opposition leader Alexei Navalny right before he died in a Russian prison last month.
What I can tell you is that the United States has been negotiating with the Russians.
Roger Karstens is the U.S. Special Envoy for Hostage Affairs.
You didn't deny that a swap was in the works and it fell apart when Navalny died.
We had a strong offer that went at the end of last year. The Russians rejected it. I was rather disappointed, but it might not have been entirely a huge surprise. But our goal now is to keep working with partners, allies, and to find that combination that's going to allow us to solve it.
How many Americans are being held hostage in the world?
So I'll tell you, my numbers at one point were over 50. They're now down in between 20 and 30. We always hesitate to give out an exact number for various reasons. In the last 3 years, the Biden and Harris administration has brought back 46 Americans that were wrongfully detained or held hostage.
So you've been successful in 46 cases in these bargaining situations.
Correct. And I can tell you, Leslie, it's a team effort. It's members of the U.S. government, members on Capitol Hill, nonprofits, NGOs, allies, partners, and even members of the media that all seem to work together to bring those people home. Evan has never worked for the U.S. government. He's not a spy. He's a journalist, and journalism should not be a crime.
Gershkovich spends 23 hours a day in his cell. Wall Street Journal editor-in-chief Emma Tucker says he's allowed to send and receive letters as long as they're in Russian.
What do you hear about his spirits?
He's a resilient character. He's an extrovert. He's a people person.
And his health?
I think his health is okay. His mum looks very closely whenever there are shots of him. And I think there's limits to how much exercise he can do. I can only imagine what the food is like. But he's meditating. He's practicing and getting ever better at Russian. He's been reading in Russian.
And he even managed to deliver something very special to his sister, Danielle.
My brother arranged that they be delivered for me for International Women's Day, March 8th.
From prison?
Yes, it was really nice.
Wow.
Yeah, you did a great job.
You did a beautiful job. Oh yeah. My goodness, that is special.
Yeah, so he's always thinking about us and finding ways to make us smile.
From the minute I walked in here, your eyes keep watering.
Oh.
It's hard for you to talk about. Or not. Maybe it helps you.
It's that bittersweet moment where I'm looking at his photos. I wish I didn't have to do this, but talking about my brother is always, it makes me smile. I miss him so much.
Quality sleep can help boost your reaction time, recovery time, and performance. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your one-of-a-kind, ever-evolving sleep needs. Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, a game changer for quality sleep. The Smart Beds automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. Committed to improving your overall athletic performance? Set a quality sleep goal that's healthy and realistic for your lifestyle. Sleep Number Smart Beds show your ideal sleep
sleep and wake schedule and best times for activities like working out and winding down, based on your circadian rhythm. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 Smart Bed is only $1,499. Save $400 for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Shop with Rakuten and you'll get it. What's it? It's the best deal, the highest cash back, the most savings on your shopping. So join Rakuten and start getting cash back at Macy's, Nike, Walmart, and other stores you love. You can even stack sales on top of cash back. Just start your shopping with Rakuten and save money at over 3,500 stores. Join for free at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn is often called author Mark Twain's masterpiece, but its depictions of race have long been controversial. Martha Teichner sat down with critically acclaimed author Percival Everett, who's put a provocative new spin on this American classic. By the way, we do mean provocative. If you're offended by strong language, you've been warned.
This is my favorite author photo, and that standing on my shoulder is Jim Crow.
Who, besides Percival Everett, would have a pet crow named Jim Crow?
He was on my shoulder when I wrote the novel Erasure. If I wasn't paying enough attention to him, he would march down my arm and peck at the keys. So I do credit him for having written some of the novel.
Consider the irony, one of Everett's favorite literary devices, that Jim Crow helped him write a book about race, a novel within a novel satirizing publishing industry complicity in perpetuating stereotypes of Black America. Erasure, published in 2001, has been turned into the Oscar-winning film American Fiction, starring Jeffrey Wright.
Deadbeat dads, rappers, crack, and splack, right?
Nobody's gonna publish this.
Just wanna rub their noses in it.
We love it.
What?
Another irony? The film he had nothing to do with, but likes, has given Percival Everett more visibility than the 30-plus books he's written, or the fact that he's been shortlisted for the Booker Prize and a finalist for a Pulitzer. Not typically. Everett's books are often perversely funny. Imagine a funny novel about lynching, written in the form of a police procedural. Funny until it isn't.
Well, humor is interesting because if I can disarm a reader with humor, then I can address serious stuff.
Everett's latest novel, James, just out, is a retelling of Huckleberry Finn from Huck's enslaved friend Jim's point of view. In it, language is a running joke, but also dangerous.
When you read it on the page, the enslaved people, Jim in particular, speak in what we would commonly call standard English, and they slip into dialect when they're around white people.
Yes. Papa, why do we have to learn this? White folks expect us to sound a certain way and can only help if we don't disappoint them, I said. The only ones who suffer when they are made to feel inferior is us.
In James, a man is lynched for stealing a pencil so Jim can write his story.
In language, and in ownership of language, there resides a great power and resides an avenue to any kind of freedom that we're going to have.
You use the N-word in your books and a lot of other words that are considered not politically correct.
Because I'm telling the truth. You know, if somebody came in here right now and said, hey, you N-word, am I going to be less offended if they use the word? No, that focus on the word misses the point. I don't care about the word, I care about the intention. I care about the meaning. I'm not impressed with attempts to cover up anything.
Percival Everett, the son of a dentist, grew up in Columbia, South Carolina. He's from a long line of physicians.
The only thing I knew growing up was I didn't want to be a doctor.
Why is that?
They had to be around people all the time. Harry is back here, and this is Banjo.
He discovered he does like being around animals.
Do you find it easier to relate to animals than you do people?
I've never had an animal lie to me.
Ah. On the way to becoming a prolific writer.
Maybe digression where we
can. And a distinguished professor of writing at the University of Southern California. Everett trained horses and even mules. He is intensely private, protective of his home and family, and only shows up for book events when he has to.
I like small streams, and so I fish with very small flies. And
he'd rather be fly fishing.
Did somebody make that?
I made that.
And ties his own flies.
The red and the white here. It frees me to think while I'm thinking.
And he paints.
The title of the show is Redaction.
Redaction?
Yes.
That's a little bit like erasure.
I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, I guess it is.
The solo show, his fourth, opens in Los Angeles next month. His vocabulary here, as abstract as his writing, is explicit.
Working with stories is internal and sedentary. I love the physicality of making the paintings. I don't consider them differently. I consider them as things I do to explain to myself my place in the world.
And where does race figure into Percival Everett's worldview, given that his books confront it?
Do I think about race? No, but it's there. Sadness? Sure. Why not? Let's have it be sadness. Reality? Yeah. Do I really care? No. I can't change this cultural tsunami that happened 400 years ago, and the waters of it are still waiting to recede.
And writing your books doesn't take steps in that direction?
One hopes. I just do what I can and move on.
We are two wild and crazy guys!
It's Sunday morning on CBS, and here again is Jane Pauley.
Steve Martin became a household name in comedy back in the 1970s. All these years later, he's still at the top of his game, which, as Tracy Smith discovered, comes as a surprise, even to him.
Okay, you don't usually associate the sound of the banjo with the view of New York City, but with Steve Martin, it all seems to work. He played for us at his apartment last month, and to everyone there, he sounded amazing.
I blew it there. You got it.
But to him, it wasn't quite good enough. In some ways, it sums up how Steve Martin has lived his whole life. And now you can see for yourself. A new Apple TV project. Steve Martin, a documentary in two pieces.
You better pull yourself together.
Traces his path from anxious kid to the superstar we've come to know.
You know, I have figured out one thing that would totally put an end to show business, and that is if the human race, instead of having two arms, just had one arm right in the center of our body. Now, the reason that would put an end to show business, how would people clap?
Near the beginning of the first film, you say, I guarantee I had no talent.
Yes.
None.
I stand by that. Well, meaning I couldn't sing, dance, or act.
Good evening and welcome. My name is Steve Martin.
Steve Martin.
I am a wild and crazy.
So what do you think if you had no talent? What did you have?
A love of show business.
Why don't I interview you as we're driving?
It's called biking, but sure.
Martin tells his story with the help of filmmaker Morgan Neville, whom you may know as the director of the 2018 Fred Rogers doc, Won't You Be My Neighbor.
So you kind of heard through the grapevine that Steve maybe would be interested?
I heard that somebody in an elevator asked Steve
if he was interested in doing a documentary.
Are you serious?
That is true. And he said maybe. And that was the crack in the door.
It's more than just a crack. Neville got all of Martin's early performances, his detailed diaries, and a good chunk of his time.
You've been a fan since you were 12 years old?
Yeah, even younger. When I was 12, I convinced my dad to drive me to Las Vegas to see Steve do stand-up at the Riviera.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So I actually got to see Steve do stand-up. I actually went to the early show and the late show that same night.
Wow.
I was at both of those shows, too.
And you also said this is one of the things that maybe you discovered more about with Steve. You're so modest.
I think you have to be. I remember Mike Nichols told me once, he said, when I'm in New York, I'm Mike Nichols. When I go to L.A., I'm thinking, how am I doing?
Seems Steve took that to heart. By the late 70s, Steve Martin was wildly successful beyond even his dreams.
We are two wild and crazy guys!
He was a fixture on Saturday Night Live.
The obsequious, purple and clairvoyant.
His comedy tours would sell out coast to coast. His stand-up record, Let's Get Small, was the first comedy album to go platinum. And then he left the stage.
Not to give anything away, but the end of the first film is you're walking away from stand-up.
Right.
Why'd you walk away?
I was exhausted by it, and I thought, wow, you know, when I do stand-up, I have to go there. If I do a movie, I stay home and the movie goes there. And also, it had a sense of permanence, like you could get the thing exactly right.
I don't really know karate.
I didn't think so.
So Steve Martin went from stand-up king to movie star.
'Cause I'm a dentist and a fixer.
But he still had his moments of self-doubt.
Why don't we just calm down now, sir? I'll tell you why we don't calm down. Because you're not excited. It takes two people for a we to calm down, doesn't it?
There's this one moment in there where this journalist says to you, hey, Steve, mm-hmm. one question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you funny anymore?
Yeah.
Ugh.
It was a bad moment because I was thinking that myself.
Were you really?
Sure. You know.
What? Why? What was that moment?
Well, you go through highs and lows in your career. So at any moment, you could be thinking, everything's working, everything's feeling great. And then, you know, a year later, you're going, hmm.
Bang, bang, Maxwell's silver hammer came down upon her.
But there have been plenty of highs.
We obviously have mutual control over our body.
Our body? It's my body. I'm not sharing my body with anyone.
Everybody's going to be real disappointed.
Martin's made more than 40 films, some of which are now considered comedy classics.
Well, they're just intimidated. They've only seen us on the big screen.
Sometimes I sort of look around and go, how'd this happen? Where did this come in? And I go, in my most self-congratulatory moment, I go, it all came out of my head.
At 78, he's on a hit TV show. He's back doing stand-up with Martin Short, and he has, by his own admission, mellowed with age.
One of the things you talk about a lot in the second film is that you've changed, and your friends talk about it too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at one point you say, I wasn't mean, I was just removed?
Yeah, I would say.
What do you mean?
I remember Tommy Smothers said once, because I was writing on this show, is talking to Steve Martin is like talking to nobody. But no, I have changed. I don't know how to quantify it. I'm just nicer, friendlier. I have this theory that as you age, you either become your worst self or your best self. And I feel like I've become my better self, and I can see other people becoming their worst self. They become more hostile. They become more difficult. And it's a pretty clear line for me.
I was after that quality that is indefinable, where you say, I don't know why it was funny, but it was.
Yeah, he says he has no talent, but with his life, Steve Martin's created a masterpiece.
What did you learn about Steve through this process?
Well, nothing.
Nothing? Then well, why do it? What was the point of doing it?
Well, it's part of being in show business, you know.
But there's something more to it for that, because you don't fall for these trappings of show business. You know what I'm saying? You didn't have to do this.
Yeah. No, it's a fantastic outcome to have a documentary done about you.
So is this kind of what you do? A documentary is natural progression?
I used to watch, I'd still watch American Masters thinking, wow, one day I'd like to be a subject of a documentary. And then suddenly you are. And I'm 78. When else?
If you love that chicken from Popeyes, you'll also love that flounder fish sandwich and shrimp tackle box from Popeyes. Made with Alaskan flounder, the flounder fish sandwich is seasoned with Louisiana herbs and spices, dusted in a southern crispy coating, and fried to a golden crisp. And as for the shrimp tackle box, you'll get 8 crispy pieces of butterfly shrimp, a regular side, hot buttery biscuit, and your choice of sauce. Does it make sense for a chicken place to have seafood this good? Not really. But it's so delicious, Popeyes might just have to take another look at that famous jingle. Love that flounder. Never mind. Popeyes, we don't make sense, we make chicken. And also seafood. But only for a limited time, so sail over to your Popeyes and try the flounder fish sandwich or shrimp tackle box for just $5.99.
For nearly 150 years, ADT has made the security of their customers a top priority, so you can have peace of mind that your home is protected. Now ADT professionally installs Google Nest products to help keep your home safe and smart. You'll be able to check in on your home and manage your security system from virtually anywhere. Plus, with Nest cams and the Nest doorbell, you can get intelligent alerts, so you'll always receive notifications on what matters most. When the most trusted name in home security adds the intelligence of Google, you've got a home with no worries. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. Google Nest Cam and Nest Doorbell are trademarks of Google LLC. ADT, brilliantly safe.
You might call it the world according to Fareed Zakaria. He's in conversation with our Kalafasane.
I feel like I'm interrupting office hours.
Well,
do you feel like the professor here in your office about to go teach a class?
Well, I do think of, you know, I've always thought of journalism as sort of, at some level, public education.
As host of GPS, Global Public Square, on CNN, 60-year-old Fareed Zakaria says he's teaching international relations to the masses.
It's now all virtual.
In a digital studio with plasma screen walls, Zakaria dives into global issues with scholars, U.S. presidents, and even the occasional celebrity.
When I move my body just like this.
No shouting allowed.
Are you willing to compromise?
Zakaria is an optimist, and he'd like to think of himself as nonpartisan.
It seems like it's hard for any news anchor to go on TV and say, it's none of your business whether I support Trump or not.
The weirdness of the Trump presidency and candidacy and such being such an assault on traditional American, I would argue, mores and norms, and the lies, the constant lying, and the... So you feel as though you're not actually taking a side when you say that this guy is lying, but it sounds like you're taking a side, right? And then he attacks you.
Now you're in the ring.
So now you're in the ring whether you want to be or not.
Is that uncomfortable for you? I get the sense that you did not get into this in order to become a partisan figure.
I don't pretend that I don't have views.
Right.
But it's my analysis rooted in fact, rooted in history.
Do you consider yourself a liberal?
I find that on most issues these days, I'm left of center. When I was in college, I was a Reaganite. I was more right of center.
I'm going to make a little raita. It's very simple. You grate the cucumber, you put yogurt in, and you then add a little cumin, a little garlic, lemon juice.
And is this something you would have grown up eating in India?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Born in Mumbai to Rafiq, a politician, and Fatima, a journalist and editor, Fareed came to America to go to college on a scholarship.
Yale, which is where I went, nobody had heard of it. You know, my dad, to his dying day, could never pronounce Yale. He would always call it Ale.
Ale?
Ale. So he'd be like, how are things at Ale?
When you first arrived on campus at Yale, was your idea that you're going to get an education in the U.S. and then go back to India?
Yeah. But very quickly, I have to confess, I kind of fell in love with America.
He went on to Harvard, getting a PhD in political science in 1993.
If you keep your fingers like this.
And, on the side, a culinary education.
I learned how to cook by watching Jacques Pepin on public television.
By 28, he was managing editor of Foreign Affairs magazine. In 2000, he joined Newsweek as a columnist.
You initially supported the Iraq War, and you later came to regret that.
In this case, I think I lost my judgment because as somebody who grew up Muslim, I was worried that I was not going to seem sufficiently, you know, tough on Muslim dysfunction. So there was a part of me that I think wanted to show my patriotic credentials.
In 2015, he called the Iraq War, quote, a failure and a terrible mistake.
I think the U.S. lost enormous credibility. It turned out to be a massive waste of American resources, of American lives.
During those years, Zakaria seemed to be everywhere, a widely read print columnist and also a TV host, first on PBS and then, starting in 2008, on CNN.
Welcome to the very first edition of Global Public Square.
But in 2012, he was accused of plagiarism.
You were briefly suspended by Time and by CNN. What did you learn then?
You know, I've had these setbacks. And initially, you know, you get defensive and you say to yourself, wait a minute. And then you have to step back and say to yourself, was this at the level of quality that I would be comfortable with? And the answer is no. And so I just said to myself, okay, I'm going to be 3 times more careful.
In his new book, Age of Revolutions, Zakaria writes about how societies embrace change and resist it, too.
You have the information revolution, which connects everybody. And then you have, at the same time, over the last 30 or 40 years, this identity revolution, where all of a sudden, you know, whether it's your sexual orientation, whether it's your national origin, whether it's the color of your skin, you're saying, you know, I want to be able to be me. And of course, what has happened is it has left a lot of people deeply unmoored, anxious, feeling like their world is going away. And now we're living through the backlash.
Right.
And it's sort of how well you can navigate that backlash is really what determines whether you'll succeed or fail in the end.
He says the speed of recent changes has unsettled the country.
We have this group of people in America who feel that they are not benefiting from all the changes in society. And that worries me a lot. But there is a kind of anti-Americanism at the heart of this, you know? I mean, you can't love your country and hate everything about it.
Zakaria is not just an observer. He speaks with world leaders regularly, both on air and off.
Do you talk to President Biden?
He's occasionally called me into the White House to talk about what I think is going on in the world.
Are you reassured by what you hear from him in private, both his ideas but also his fitness for the office?
Yeah. When I have talked to him one-on-one or in a small group, he's alert, he's sharp, he's wise, I would say, most importantly. I think he is performing his job as president extremely well. Now, can you have the energy to hustle on the campaign trail? That's hard.
Fareed Zakaria says he didn't want Biden to run for re-election. Now that the campaign is underway, he thinks the choice is obvious. But he says it's not easy to be an optimist these days.
I worry a lot about what is happening in America right now. There was sort of guidance. There were gatekeepers. And part of this revolutionary age is that's all gone away. And what you're finding is that there is no self-regulatory mechanism, that there's no way that you can somehow say, no, this is beyond the pale. I will return to my optimism. We will find a way, but this is a very rocky period.
Thank you for listening. Please join us when our trumpet sounds again next Sunday morning.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to CBS Sunday Morning with Jane Pauley ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Brighten your mornings with CBS News Sunday Morning merchandise from ParamountShop.com. Shop mugs, sweatshirts, and t-shirts to start your mornings with style. Take 20% off at checkout with code SUNDAY20 at ParamountShop.com. That's 20%
20% off at checkout on all CBS News Sunday Morning products with code SUNDAY20 at ParamountShop.com.
Catch every episode of 60 Minutes, America's most watched news magazine show, as a podcast. Hear in-depth investigations across politics, news, and entertainment on your schedule. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.